Christmas Seminar, Lecture 16, I Am Illumined Peace. This is the thought we have, this is the lecture we have for Wednesday, December 31st, 2003, soon to be 2004. Today is a great day. It's the closing together of our seminar, the seminar that we have, which is Next Step Illumination, I Am Spiritually Illumined. And it is the bringing together of all of our ideas of how much we love ourselves and how much we love each other and what kind of a life we're going to have from here on, depending upon how we open our eyes to what we have right now. Okay. I am illumined peace. I am illumined peace. What does it mean to be illumined peace? We've been going around saying peace, peace, wonderful peace. Peace, peace, wonderful peace. And what did we mean by saying peace, peace? Do we mean that there's no war, that there's no conflict, that there's no unhappiness? Do we mean that there's no illness, there's no strife, there's no conflicts in life? No. All that I am peace means, or all that peace means, is that we are in, I hate to use the word absolute, but we're in absolute balance. We are one as in all that exists. There is nothing separate from us. When we are peace, there's nothing that exists outside of us. There's no person, no place, no thing. There is no object. There is no situation that exists outside of us when we are peace. That's a tough one. That's a tough one because all of us have a tendency to feel that we live in a human body. And that's a lie. We feel that we have to eat food, breathe air, and drink water, and do things like that because it's necessary for our survival. And that's not true. That's not true. And then we are so possessed by our human life, by our human experiences, that we feel we'll reincarnate and come back here again. We'll come back into this experience. Or that we want to go and be greeted in death by our parents or by our loved ones or by people who've died before us. Now, can you think of anything more boring for a group of people, for instance, to be waiting for other people to die and then greet them and say, "Welcome to death. Now, join us as we wait for the next contingent to come." As we wait for the next dead ones to come over the horizon. And as far as I'm concerned, I would say, hey, that doesn't sound very exciting. That truly is hell. Now, what reason did I get to be in hell? I thought I was going to be in heaven. Well, in heaven, you're greeted by your loved ones. No, you're not. In heaven, you're greeted by love. You're greeted by peace. You're greeted by harmony. You're greeted by life. You're greeted by joy. You're greeted by every bountiful, beautiful expression that has ever been used upon the face of the earth. Heaven is poetry. And when you live in this life in a poetic consciousness, you are living in heaven. When you live in this life with music in your soul that keeps oozing out of every pore of your being, and being a delight to you. Now, your music may not be a delight to everybody. Your music may not be pleasant to everybody. Sometimes we sound like caterwauling with our singing, and we would better shut up. But no, we are singing for ourselves. We are speaking for ourselves. We are giving the music of our soul, the poetry of our heart, to ourselves. And if anyone else can harmonize with it, fantastic. If they don't, it's still our poetry. It's our love. It's our beingness. It's us. And it's good. Oh, it is very good. I love it when I sing. I think my singing is the greatest singing in the entire world. I have never heard anyone sing with as much joy and happiness and whatever as I do. Oh, some people hit notes better than I do, but hey, that's their problem. That's all they worry about is how to hit the note. I hit the whole song. I have joy in my heart for the whole song. Now, I'm not knocking them. I'm merely saying, I'm good. And when you believe in yourself that you're good too, then you're going to experience all this happiness that's waiting for you. All this happiness is right there inside of you, but you did not take charge of it. You didn't take credit for it. You didn't enjoy it. Now, when I was a kid, I thought I was one of the greatest writers in the world. You switched it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, smarty pants, you could have told me. You switched computers. I see the old one right there. So, no wonder it'll work. Ha! Well, fantastic. One less for me to put on there. You are so wonderful. I mean, I create things even when I'm not paying attention. I create good in my world even when I'm not realizing that I'm creating good because I'm only good. And you are only good. You say, Herb, you sure have a vain, egotistical attitude about yourself. No, I don't. This is God's house, and I take good care of it. This is God living in me, and I am God. And how can I do any less than be perfect and good and wonderful? How can I experience anything less than the wonder and the magic of the universe, my universe that I created, right? So let's get with it. Let's stop thinking that there's some magical mystery that's going to happen to make us happy when the magical mystery is just waiting to burst forth from us. And you know, as a relative human being, each one of us have a different magical mystery. Each one of us have different desires. Each one of us have a different pain in the neck about us, you know? Some of us feel we have to tell other people how to eat. We feel we have to tell other people what is the right diet for them. We tell other people how they should be served and how they should react. And, hey, that's not too cool. We should just do our own thing. Now, I'm here, and I sometimes share with you self-discipline. Self-discipline means that you have chosen to listen to what I have to say, so I give you all sorts of things. And I sit at the table, and I say, I don't choose to drink milk right at the moment. And the milk still comes in my glass, ready for me to drink at every meal, which is a thoughtful thing, except that it's thoughtless and that you don't recognize that I don't want it. If I don't drink it and it just sits there, then you know that I don't want it. And when I say I want only a third portion of the meal, and you give me abundantly, well, that's a inconsideration on your part of yourself. Because you are going against what you know. You're going against what your own heart tells you. He said he wants none of that, and you don't give it to him. Now, I never say I don't want any of that. I only say I want a small portion. Now, I look at Christina here, and she's a wisp of a creature, and I say, Christina, you're a growing girl. You should have tons of potatoes and tons of... And she says, no, thank you. She says, I find it very easy maintaining my weight and maintaining my balance and maintaining my beauty and my majesty about me by eating what the amount that I choose and the things that I choose. And that's wonderful. But should she have to argue to be able to do that? No. Does she say that you should eat like we do? Christina sets the table and she serves each one of us what she eats. And we say, hey, where's something to eat? But she doesn't do that. She serves what she knows to be a normal meal, and she takes for herself what she knows to be a normal meal. She respects herself, and we respect her. We don't say, hey, you skinny little rat, why don't you eat something, you know? Put some flesh on those bones and stuff like that, you know? And she says, I may be a skinny rat, but you just watch, I'll outlive you by 2 or 3 lifetimes. Mm-hmm. In a healthy body and a healthy mind. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Did I say it all good? In a healthy body, a healthy mind, and naturally a healthy spiritual awareness of herself. Now, we can do the same thing. And it's not that we must follow her program, because What if you were in a different country where they didn't have the foods that Christina likes to eat, or that Christina normally eats? What would you do? Oh dear, I don't have the foods that I need. I'm not going to survive. I'm going to wither away to nothing, you know. And you will. But if you say, okay, when in Rome, do like the Romans do. I'm here in Asia, and they don't have the market on the corner of the street, and they don't have Henry's, and they don't have all these, the Trader Joe and so forth, to go running to for these fine quality foods that I like, and these wonderful salads and special salad things, vegetables that come from places fresh. So I'll eat what's there. Now, what's on the corner market in Asia, let's say? Well, rice. Lots of rice. And rice is very nutritious. Now, what else beside that? Well, they probably have soya sauce too. I don't know. I would put it there. Now, what else do they have? Now, maybe they have some taro roots. Those are the roots that are like potatoes. The Portuguese used to raise them. They have great big leaves on them, and the roots are thick, bulbous things like potatoes. And, well, now, maybe you're in Ireland, and this is before all their changes, and all they had was potatoes. And the people lived healthy, happy lives with potatoes. And then they had the potato blight, and what happened? They had the great famine. Everybody died. Not everybody, but many people died because they didn't have enough food. Now, why would nature do such a horrendous thing to a country as to cause potato blight to be in their world and destroy the country, an island nation like that? Why would it do that? Well, it didn't. They did that. With the anger they had in their soul against the King of England and a few other people, with the anger they had in their soul against the Catholic Church and other things, with the anger they had, they had enough anger in their soul to put blight on everything, you know, to blight every birth that they had, as well as every death, and make the country just a stinking place. We do that too. We do that too. However, when you move to America, you move into a country that is more liberal. It has to be liberal, because it has such a diversity of people here. And the people have all these unique ideas of how things should be done. But there's a few principles that remain perfect in every nation. And the principles here in the United States are that we should respect everyone's right to be themselves, and the freedom of speech, and the freedom of worship, and many other freedoms. You see, all of these things are here. Well, now, Switzerland doesn't have that, does it? Do they? They certainly do. Germany doesn't have that. They certainly do. Japan couldn't have. They certainly do. Iraq, under Saddam, didn't have that. It certainly did. Those people could not have survived throughout all the years that they have survived if they did not have the basic freedoms that were necessary to be themselves. They did one thing that you can't do. They did one thing that you will never be able to force yourself to do. They believed in their religious philosophy and in their leadership. And their religious philosophy and their leadership could do no wrong. And hey, that's not bad. But we, on the outside, look in and we think it's terrible. We think it's not right. It's not good for a nation to be under such forceful control. But that's what the people wanted. And that's what the people want to stay there. They want to remain there. And we wonder, why would anyone want to do that? But they do. Why do you want to remain where you are? Why do you want to remain in the state or the country where you are when it has been unkind to you for some reason? You know, we all have suffered unkindness in one way or another in our life, and if we were to use that unkindness as the criteria for it, as some people, they get a ticket for driving, and they get 5 or 6 tickets for speeding, and then they hate the police. They hate the police because the police are always giving them tickets. Well, they're always speeding. They're always violating the rule that they had honor-bound agreed to do. On my honor, on my life, I will follow the rules of the road here in California and drive according to the speed limits and do everything that the law books say. And you cannot do everything the law books say, because I don't believe there's one human being on the face of the earth who has read all of the law books concerning the rules of the road in California or any other state. There's too many, and they change. And they change. One year, it's driving 50 miles an hour on a road because the road is conditioned that it doesn't service better. And the next year, they remodel the road and make it into a super freeway, and you're going 70-plus miles an hour, you know. You say, wow, you know, last year I couldn't do this. You know, it's against the law to do this. That's right. It's a changing world. It's a changing world. Would you want it to stay the same? Would you want the law to stay at 30 miles an hour, you know, so you don't lose your breath? Would you, is that what you want? You see, times change. Cars change. People change. Attitudes change. Cars definitely change, my goodness sakes. And then when the petroleum situation was so difficult, the electric car business was doing a boomerang business until we found some new outlets for petroleum. And so the interest in electric cars died. And all of the beautiful electric cars, which could have been wonderful, which the government forced the manufacturers to make, it was a loss for them. Maybe sometime in the future they will find that they want the electric cars, but at the moment they don't. You see, this is a strange way to look at life. I am illumined peace, and I am illumined peace not because I know all these things I've told you here, but because I live in my inner center. I live in my inner center of illumined peace, where I always do everything correct. Now you tell me, with all of your face hanging out there, and you say you obey all the laws of your state or your nation. Tell me that. Tell me you obey all the laws. You can't, because there's no way. So you are indeed lying every moment in one way or another relative to those laws, if not many other things. Now, do you see how that builds up inside of us a dichotomy? It's something to destroy our consistency. It's something to destroy our belief in rationale, our belief in truth, our belief in honor, our belief in following the rules. We can't follow the rules because we don't know them all. Now, that doesn't stop us from following one rule that will handle all the rules. Does anyone know what the name of that rule is?
Be true to myself.
That's a good rule, but that's not the one I meant. What's the rule? Common sense. If we live by the rule of common sense, we will always do the right thing. If not, we'd be pretty close to it. But if everyone used their common sense, they would not get into trouble. Do you feel, common sense is from feeling too, do you feel that what you're doing is not good? Then don't do it. Do you feel that what you're doing is going to deprive somebody else of some good? And, well, don't do it. You don't have to deprive anyone of anything to get your good. You don't have to deprive the world of being a fantastic world just to have your experiences fulfilled. I mean, Bill Gates has gazoo, gazoo, gazoo money, and it keeps gazooing. You know, it keeps multiplying with the stocks and with the interest rates and things like that, and it never stopped. He could not, in his entire lifetime ahead of him, spend that money that he got. Oh, he could spend it, you know, buy a nation or two and stuff like that, but what else could he spend it on? What else could he could have every luxury life could ever afford, but you know, he won't do that. You know, even Bill Gates, and he's a good example for us all the time, even Bill Gates is not going to go through his house and say, the electronical system of my house is 5 years old. I am going to update it. Do you know why he's not going to do it? Because then he's going to have to learn the update. And you see, he's doing to us what he doesn't want done to him. He keeps upgrading our computers and upgrading our programs and upgrading these things. And we all have to learn these upgrades if we do it. But like our webmaster, Daniel, he likes to hang in there with some of the old programs because they work very well. And they do what he wants to do, and he knows them. Whereas if he had to learn the new programs, then he would be very busy, and he would not be free to do the things he wanted to do. Now, actually, you have to look at a person like Daniel and say, he must be lazy. He must be lazy in not wanting to read the latest on everything. Because if he's dealing with Microsoft, he must read all of their stuff. If he's dealing with Corel Draw, he must know all of their stuff. If he's dealing with what do you call the underlying substance of our computer system, the software, something that defines the programming. That's it, the programming. Yeah, he would have to learn all the new programming techniques, the new programming facilities and things like that. Well, you see, Bill Gates is a programmer. And Bill Gates, you can be sure, does not read all the programming that his company puts out. It'd be a waste of his time. He would have time for nothing else. What Bill Gates does, and it's a good recommendation for us, Bill Gates is illumined. See, like our lecture today, I am illumined peace. Bill Gates is illumined with an idea, a concept. And then he takes his mind and he says, how can I bring this concept into being? Now, much of the programming for that concept already exists, so he doesn't have to redo it. But the nuances that make the programming more effective, more dramatic, and would, let's say, keep out the bugs and the viruses and things like that, naturally keeping them out. These are things that he just flows with and he creates. And when he goes home after a day's work, he has taken, let's say, 2 million hours of time that have been put into the program, and then he's added his 8 hours of time to it and made that program substantially brand new. He has upgraded it so that it would fulfill the new requirements that are needed in the market today. Now, Daniel, our webman, he, maybe we are misjudging him. He does not read the books. He does not look into what the new programming is. He looks at each program that he must face, and he says something that we suggested to him. What was that, Ellen?
I know. God is me the answer.
That's right. That's exactly what he says. He didn't take credit for that before, but he's doing it now. I know that I know. God in me is the answer. So he looks at any problem. I'm in there with a problem sitting before him, and I say, Daniel, what should we do here? And I see him sitting quietly, not having the vaguest idea what I'm talking about or what I want, but tuning in to me. And then I can hear the wheels going around in his head. You know, I can hear the gears clanging and moving. And then all of a sudden he says, okay, here's how we begin. And he doesn't tell me, he just does it. And then, now, that's there. Now we add this to it. Now there, here's your solution. Ha! Just like that. Now, where did he get that? He didn't get it from a book. He got it from his universal computer in his own head. And he listens to it, and he uses it very wisely. Can we listen to the universal computer in our head and use it wisely? Yes, we can. Do we listen to the universal computer and use it wisely? Of course we do. Of course we do. You're like the person who the millionaire said, what can I do for you? And you say, I'd like $1 million. And the millionaire says, here you are. And then you say, oh, damn, I should have asked for 10. 10 million, you know? But no, you shouldn't have. You shouldn't have asked for any money. You should have said, Mr. Millionaire, how did you become a millionaire, and how may I follow your footsteps? And he will spend time to show you the path he took, which you may be able to take or may not, But it is worth far more than the $1 million, because the $1 million is quickly spent. But the passport into his consciousness of wealth, of goodness and abundance, that is without value. You cannot say what its value is. And that again goes back to our concept of, you want the goose that lays the golden eggs, 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 or do you want a golden egg which has great value? This is what we teach here. We teach the goose. And we teach how to get the goose and how to respond to it and how to encourage the goose to give more eggs. Because the goose can run out of eggs too, you know. It can run out of whatever the process is to have eggs. It can run out of that process. And it can run out of that process because we have not been feeding it the right, let's say, nutrients to keep the process going. But as long as we feed it the right nutrients to keep the process going, and what are the right nutrients, Ellen?
I like me.
Yeah, and?
Peace.
Yeah. The right nutrients are words of confidence and words of expectation and experience in you about it. It's the same with your little child. You say, hey, you're doing great in school, and the kid just squeaks by. And, hey, I'm so proud of you. I love the way you bring your papers home and let me look at them. I'm so thrilled with how you're doing it. And then the kid starts bringing the papers home, letting mom look at it. And the scenario goes on. And by the time the scenario is done, the kid, who is naturally a genius, is truly a genius and expresses it in every area of his life. Now, this is not something unusual. This is something very common and very usual for all of us, if we're willing to recognize that we are illumined peace. You see, in peace, we don't run after something. We let the illumination take place in us. And the way to accomplish it takes place in us. Again, we'll use Bill Gates. Bill Gates is in his office. He's the boss, the big chef. And he has a big staff of people working around him. And many of his people, most of them, are millionaires also, because they have invested properly following his advice. Well, you can imagine there are many girls in Bill's office, many competent women. You would say they're competent women, wouldn't you? Yeah. Okay, these competent women, and nice women, beautiful women, unmarried women, and lovely things, you know. And they all say, yeah, I'd like to hook up with Bill. Well, now comes the question. Why do you want to hook up with Bill? Well, he's a nice guy and very rich. He's a nice guy and this, and he's a nice guy and that. Well, why do you want to hook up with him? I like him. Now, could you imagine any one of these many women in his company just plain saying, I like him. I just like him. Most of them are fearful of him because he is so big. And who did he finally marry? He married one of his account executives, one of the people who were working on software and so forth, just like he loves. And this woman was just pleasant. She didn't push herself at him. She just liked him and enjoyed him and enjoyed being around him. And he became aware of that same enjoyment, and so he asked her to marry him. Now, did Bill have to go out in the bars and search for women? Did he have to go in church and search for women? Did he have to look around in his business and see which woman is going to marry me for myself, not for my money, you know? Well, in his business, he's pretty well got that taken care of because they're all millionaires. They're all very wealthy people. Not as wealthy as he, but very wealthy people. So they don't need his money. They can live quite comfortably with the money they have and the money they keep growing. So, essentially, anyone who is interested in Bill is interested in him as a man now. And that type of relationship could be very meaningful. You see, it isn't a matter of where you go to find what you need or what you want. It's a matter that you go within yourself and you are yourself, and you have a lot of fun. You enjoy yourself, and you enjoy your world, and you enjoy who you are, and you're in peace. You are peace. You are just gently, lovingly, sensitively enjoying everything that comes your way. And as you do this, everything comes your way. Everything comes your way. But if you don't do this, you turn it off. You turn it off because you doubt. And when you doubt, peace. Peace is turned off. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Now, is that really true? Is it really true that my little old thought brought peace to the world? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, come on, you really are an egotist. You know, you really are strange in your thinking. But it is true. It is true. If you are standing with a group of people waiting to cross the street and an accident is taking place in front of you, and you say, all is in divine order, and the accident goes crunch and crash and kerlibbity-doo, and 12 or 15 cars are all piled up in a mess, and everybody walks out, no problem. No problem. No injuries to the cars, yeah, but no injuries to the people. Now, why would you have injuries to the cars? Because your first thought is, uh-oh, here's a pileup. It goes so quick. And then you immediately say, everyone's in, surrounded by my pure white light of love. Everybody's okay. Everybody's fantastic. And so they crawl out of windows and doors and stuff, and they're all fantastic. They're not scratched or bruised or clothing awry. They are all fantastic. Now, but Herb, that doesn't happen. Yes, it does. It happens more often than you know. Sometimes there's nobody in the audience watching the show of an accident who says all is in divine order. Sometimes there's nobody saying that. And tremendous things happen. People die. People are injured. People have problems. But so long as one is there saying all is in divine order, it is in divine order. So long as you say, I am illumined peace, you are illumined peace. Now, you know what you think illumined peace is. Illumined peace is being content, being happy, being fulfilled. Illumined peace is knowing who and what you are, and knowing why and where you are. Illumined peace is a very powerful and a very wonderful thing. But that's up to you to decide for yourself whether illumined peace is for you. Illumined peace is a fun thing because, you see, it says nothing and yet it says everything. When your body is functioning properly, you don't even know it's there. You don't even know you have arms and legs. You don't know that your nose itches because it doesn't itch. You don't know that you have anything at all that would be troubling you. You don't know it because all is in divine order. Now, can you extend yourself a little bit and say all is in divine order on the campus? All is in divine order in our county, in our state, in our nation, in our world? All is in divine order in our universe? Well, that's really quite a job. Job for who? You merely spoke your word, all is in divine order. You do not have to do anything about it. And see, this is the big point. You do not have to do anything about it. You do not have to make it happen. And this is where we have our big hang-up. We feel we have to make it happen. And when we have to make it happen, then we have to put our intelligence into it. How do we do it? Where do we do it? Who do we talk to? What sort of things can be done? Fascinating. You can be guided. I guided our group here, our people, to do many things, and sometimes they didn't do it. And the blessing that it could have brought about, that didn't bring about. Herb, why didn't you go do it then? I'm not here to change the world. I'm only here to share the principle and the rules so you can create the world however you want it. You do not change the world. You created in your likeness and in your order. And when you are in good balance with yourself, you create your world in good balance with yourself. So, these are things we do. These are things we think. These are things that we live. These are things that we are. I find it so not too confusing, but so confusing when I give all of these informational pieces to people, and then they say, but my case is different. In my world, it's different. In my world, it's a different circumstance. Now, I told you about our telephone calls because I wanted to irritate you. I wanted to shake you up. I wanted you to say, why does he do that? Why does he do that? And what should you really say? Mucknicks. Mucknicks. What difference does it make? If that is the game he wants to play, let him play it. We're untouched by it. Oh, don't you know I have to have somebody to talk to? I've got to do this. Hey, cool. Create them right where you are. Create them right where you are. You are where you are because that is where you chose to create yourself right at this moment. It's not where you belong. It's where you chose to create yourself. Now, are you going to create yourself there without people who delight in you, without people who think you're a wonderful person, without people who are lifted up by your presence? Oh, yes, everyone's lifted up. Well, remember that then. Oh, yes, people just love to tell me. Remember that then. Oh, yeah, people just like to tell me about their philosophy too. Remember your philosophy. Let them tell you about their philosophy, but you remember your own. If you do not remember your own philosophy and live your own philosophy, then you will start living theirs. And I guarantee you, you don't know their philosophy as well as you know your own. So you're going to be making a lot of mistakes as you live their philosophy, you know? Mm-hmm. Be careful. If you're going to play with the big boys, you better be a big boy. If you're going to play with the big girls, you better be a big girl. If you're going to play with a little girl, you better be a little girl. Mama, stop worrying about the sand getting on your skirt. Stop worrying about the dirt. Stop worrying about somebody piddling in the corner and you sit on top of it. Don't worry about that. Don't be disturbed by that. We're not disturbed. Mama, don't make something that you're possessed by, because we're going to come and destroy it, but we're not going to destroy it. You see, that's your word. We're going to come and rearrange it. We're going to come and rearrange it. And isn't that a whole lot different than destroy? My goodness sakes. Does nature rearrange the face of the planet from time to time with volcanoes and earthquakes and hurricanes and other things? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really something. How can people live on a hurricane island when a hurricane comes through every now and then and just blows virtually everything away? And yet the trees remain standing. How do the trees remain standing? Well, they keep their roots firmly in the ground. And they don't monkey with anybody else's business. They don't intertwine their roots to make them stronger, to make them bind together like the redwoods do in Northern California. They don't do that. They grow separately. They grow a wide base of roots. Understand that. Understand that there are many ways of being stable. There are many ways of being the master of yourself. There are many ways of not being touched by the world around you. And one of the best ways of not being touched by anything is to love it like a mother loves her child. A mother loves her child, allowing the child to grow, to expand, to do stupid things, and not saying that that's everlasting. You'll never learn. You're so stupid, you know. And a mother would never say that, because a mother knows that tomorrow they will learn. Even today they'll learn. You must be as gentle to yourself as a mother would be to her child. And as you're this gentle, then the doors are open for you to walk into your illumination, into your illumined peace. It's a fantastic experience, I tell you, walking and living in illumined peace. And this is all that I know for you guys, and all that I know that you want. Have you thought of anything for illumined peace for yourself? Have you had any idea of what makes illumined peace for you? Ellen, would you like to say what makes illumined peace for you?
I remember when I went the first time alone in the mountains. There was practically not a person I met. And it was in St. Moritz when I took a long day all by myself. And I arrived at a little lake. And whenever I think of peace and I want to have a symbol of something, I think of that day. It was a crystal clear, beautiful, sunny day in November. And I came arrived at this lake, and I sat at that lake, and I could see my own figure in the lake because it was so crystal clear and beautiful. And there was a quietness, a calmness around and about me. And it was surely in the outer, but I could not have felt it if I hadn't been so peaceful with myself. And it was practically the first time that I said, hey, being alone and even going on a long way where I didn't know where I would arrive, I enjoyed this peaceful walk in the mountains all by myself.
Christina, do you recognize what she's talking about? Do you recognize what she's talking about? She's talking about biofeedback, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's talking about having that point in her consciousness where she knows perfect peace, and she can go to that point anytime she wants and be at perfect peace because she knows how it felt at that time. That's what we were talking about the other day. You can go to that point. And when you go to that point, you can experience it without going through all of the distance. Like right now, you were just there.
Yeah.
You were just there, and you were living it through your telling us about it, and that's very beautiful. You see, these are little symbols that each one of us have. We each have these biofeedback peak points in our awareness of where we touched that peace, we touch that inner illumination, that inner joy. And go ahead, try to explain it to somebody else. Even Ellen explaining it to us, it sounds just simple, but the depth to her was far greater than any words that she'll ever be able to use to describe it. And I think that's great, Ellen. That's great. Sylvia, did you ever arrive at a peak point of illumination and peace that you remember well? Of course, you don't have to remember it. You know, you don't always remember it. You have it, but it becomes the sort of secret in the secret garden of your heart. But do you have any that you do remember, or one?
Well, I don't have one that is bound to an outer symbol, but maybe to an inner symbol of letting go. Whenever I arrive at the point where I can let go of worrying to please anybody or to do things right for somebody and just feel within myself and feel a peace coming and the outer starts to just like fade away. The people still exist, but they don't exist in a way, and it's such a blissful and fulfilling feeling, yeah, hard to describe, and it's beautiful.
And you say that's how you feel 24 hours of the day, huh?
That's right.
Beautiful. Well, that's what you want to direct your attention to. You may not get the 24 hours, but you can sure work on more than a second, you know. And let that really pour through your being and just sort of percolate through you. And then you'll find that nothing disturbs you.
Exactly.
Nothing disturbs you. But everything illumines you.
Mm-hmm.
You look at any silly little thing, which before was a silly little thing, now becomes a joy. You look at the pattern of the sunlight on the carpet here.
Yeah.
And you see the candle burning behind it. And yet each has its own illumination, each has its own awareness. And the candle would never trade for the sun, and the sun would never trade for the candle, but yet each has their time and their purpose. And that's beautiful. But your expression was very, very significant. Now, what would you say, Madame Randa?
Yeah, I remember the first time I ever felt that alone peace. I went with Rick and his surrogate parents, Harry and Ruth, to Utah on a fishing trip. And I've never been fishing before. And it was in the mountains, and we had to climb some mountains and go over to a little lake or whatever. But I remember that I didn't have to talk. I was just quiet. I felt completely content. I remember my breath. I remember the ease that I felt at just being and comfortable without any judgments, nothing, just complete relaxation. And it's so beautiful, and just remembering that.
And that's
back.
The point.
Mm-hmm.
Remember it, not because you want to remember the event, but
right.
You want to remember the feeling. And that
mm-hmm.
feeling is such a powerful, dynamic feeling, it can change your whole life.
Oh.
And if you can train yourself to live in that awareness, then even greater awareness comes, because you're on the path, you're on the trek, you're in harmony with it. That's great.
You didn't talk?
Yep, that's great. And yeah, and you didn't talk, huh? My goodness, what did they do? Give you something to eat?
No.
That's beautiful. But I'm sure whatever you did say made them all very happy, because you spoke from your peaceful center. That makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Gertrude, can you recall any circumstance like that?
Yes. When I take my bicycle and drive down to the Greifensee and make a round, and in the middle I sit down in the restaurant and take a cup of coffee, sit on the lake, and I feel I'm in holiday, and I'm really far away from my home, and I'm really in illumined peace. And I enjoyed to make this ride alone.
And what sort of thoughts go through your mind when you are at the point of peaceful relaxation, either riding on the bike or sitting having your coffee in the cafe or looking out across the sea? what is there a time, or is it just all together?
Yeah, I think I live a wonderful life. I am free to do what I like to do. This gives me this wonderful feeling that I can go and I have to ask nobody what I have to do.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
And many people give up their freedom for things like a job, raising children, a marriage, and other things like that, and for habits and problems. They think that they're more important than the peace that comes. That's why, you know, it's so fortunate for men and women who have a job, and they can walk home from their job. Because on that walk home, which may be a few blocks, they do some deep meditation. If you drive home, there's always the traffic that demands your attention. But to walk home, nobody expects you to talk to them. Nobody expects anything out of you. You just walk in the crowd or without the crowd. You just walk sort of in your private circle of self. And this is like your trip to the Greifensee. Yeah, you do it in the wintertime when there's snow in Switzerland too?
No.
No, it'd be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
to try to get up and down the hill. Now, what happens when you take these jaunts, or that jaunt perhaps you take alone, like you say, but what happens when you take your dog along? What happens to your meditative experience? Does it, the dog increase it or decrease it?
No, it's no more the same. I had first the idea to take the dog with me also, but it's no more the same.
Now, what made you so intelligent to realize that that was more important for your personal privacy than just to, because you had that love heart where you always take your kids and your dog with you everywhere?
Because I like myself.
Ah.
And I'm number one.
You like yourself and you're number one. That's great. If we could all come to that conclusion when it's something concerning our puppy dog, what we love so much, or our kids and our grandkids and what have you, and yet just say, I'm going for a Grammy, Rosie, I want to come with you. No, this is my time alone. But I want to be with you. It's my time alone. You just stay here and read your lesson, and I'll be back in a few minutes, and then we'll take a walk together then, maybe, you know. But this is my time, and I'm holding that time for me alone. That's good. You're a smart lady. Smarter than the average bear, huh? Ingeborg, what about you? What illuminating, spiritually enlivening, dynamic, powerful, fantastic moment sparkled in your life many times?
Well, when I was with Gertrude, I felt totally at peace, in harmony, and that all was quiet, and all was fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did she make that happen for you?
Because she didn't ask anything, and we had no.
How did you make that happen for you?
I was alone there in the house.
But how did you make that happen for you?
It just happened.
Well,
I created it.
You were unrushed, right?
Yes.
And Gertrude let you have time for yourself.
Yeah.
And she didn't feel she had to always be entertaining you.
Right.
And so she could go about her life and her work, and then you were just there as an invited but unobtrusive guest.
Yes.
And you felt her inclusion of you in her life without feeling that you had to run around with her.
Right.
That's great. Now, why did you create that way for yourself? You did, you know.
Yes, I knew.
Why did you create that for yourself like that?
To have this experience.
Yeah, well, you created that for yourself because you like yourself. Because you really enjoy your own company, too.
Yeah.
And you went to see your ex-husband?
Yes.
Now, in visiting with your ex-husband, you were there two weeks or so?
10 days, maybe.
10 days, okay. Now, of those 10 days, how many hours do you think you spent with him?
Well, it was every day about 4 hours.
4 hours?
Yeah.
That much, huh? And then, where did you spend the rest of the time?
I went to town, I went shopping.
You went on your own meditative experiences, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You were at peace with yourself,
yeah.
And you did not have to be with him or anybody else.
No.
Now, did you have any feeling of peace during that time? Because you were away from every one of us, you were away from everything that you were regularly accustomed to, you know.
No, I was at peace.
Yeah, that's good. So, have at it. Thank you. Christina, what could you ever tell us about your moments of bliss and peace?
Well, one very significant one was when I was here during the School of the Master.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had to, well, we had just time to walk and meditate.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up the mountain here, the path where, not as high like to the end where Herbert's path was, just to
really overlook the countryside. And I think, I don't recall exactly what we have to say or think, but it was like I like me or something inside, and or I'm God, and,
mm-hmm.
and say it inside, and as loud as possible. And I recall that I shouted it, you know, like out to the whole universe as far as I could see, and with no voice, but a very lot of power. And that is a very significant remembrance, and I use for meditation. And also, if I have a feeling like I want some room, this is the perfect room I get,
mm-hmm.
because it's without an end.
And you shouted without a voice.
Yeah.
And that's an exciting adventure, isn't it, by itself? But it reverberated inside, and it said to you, you're very good, you're very good, you're very good. I like me, I like me, I like me. So that's good. Now, how would you call that a mystical experience? How would you call that a blissful experience, or whatever term we want to give it? An illumined experience.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You'd call that an illumined experience, huh? That's great.
And also, I think having a touch of allness, or feeling the allness.
Oh, so you had an intuitive awareness of the allness then too, and being part of it, or being in it. How can you be part of the allness? You are the allness. Mm-hmm.
Because I felt so filled out with mm-hmm. this voice inside, and also the space all around me.
Terrific.
It was like the inside and the outside.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. It's a good feeling, isn't it? But like we were talking earlier when we were counseling there, we were talking about finding that place of bliss, finding that place of illumination within yourself, you know. And you've had them, but you just want to tune into them. Like your meditation with your biofeedback, you find that feeling in your inner self where you're at a peak point of meditation and illumination. And you'd like to go back to that. And if you can train yourself to go back to that, it saves you a lot of confusion, because then you just go back to it. For instance, Ellen, just going back to her point at the lake there, where she could see her face reflected in the water, and the water was so still, and she could look down to the bottom of the lake. It wasn't terribly deep there, maybe 8 or 10 feet or more, but she could look down and she could see the bottom, and it was untouched. It was just like a still life of a painting. And you see, whenever she wants peace or bliss, she just moves back to that. She can. I'm sure she hasn't done that as often as she'd like to, but she can. And Sylvia can go into hers. All of you can go into yours, you know, which is a beautiful thing. Thank you. So think on these things, and think also, if you will, what various aspects of spiritual bliss or spiritual illumination that you have known in the past. You don't need to do a lot of research, but just click to them, you know, click to them, and think, hey, yeah, oh yeah, mm-hmm, oh yeah, oh yeah. And if you can't even write them down, like Ellen would write down the crystal clear lake near San Moritz, in the mountains of San Moritz. And of course, that would immediately take her there. And each one of you would have some key note that refers to your experience. But don't have just one experience, because you've had many. And list these experiences not by a lot of words, but just by a couple of catchphrases that when you see them, it takes you right on back. It's like in hypnosis, where they have the post-hypnotic suggestions and so forth, and they're very functional. They're very functional. This is a self-hypnotic post-hypnotic suggestion, and it's a good thing to use, and good thing to know about, and a good thing to be master of. All right. Well, let's take our pause now, and then we'll return in a few moments and have Living in Awareness. And let's return about quarter to 11, 10:45. That gives you half an hour to catch your breath, have an apple, have a coffee, and be ready for excitement. I love you.
Love you.
Love you. Love you. Thank you.